The Lord be with you.
And with
a reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Glory to you, O Lord. At that time, Jesus walked by the Sea of Galilee, went up on the mountain, and sat down there. Great crowds came to him, having with them the lame, the blind, the deformed, the mute, and many others. They placed them at his feet, and he cured them. The crowds were amazed when they saw the mute speaking, the deformed made whole, the lame walking, and the blind able to see, and they glorified the God of Israel. Jesus summoned his disciples and said, "My heart is moved with pity for the crowd, for they have been with me now for 3 days and have nothing to eat. I do not want to send them away hungry for fear that they may collapse on the way." The disciples said to him, "Where could we ever get enough bread in this deserted place to satisfy such a crowd?" Jesus said to them, "How many loaves do you have?" "Seven," they replied, "and a few fish." He ordered the crowd to sit down on the ground. Then he took the 7 loaves and the fish, gave thanks, broke the loaves, and gave them to the disciples, who in turn gave them to the crowds. They all ate and were satisfied. They picked up the fragments left over, 7 baskets full. The Gospel of the Lord. Yeah, there's a lot to comment on in the gospel passage. Perhaps just to muddy the waters a bit for you. This is the second feeding of the multitude in Matthew's gospel. So, and you probably picked up on that at least in one detail, right? There were 7 loaves. Yeah, and then the rest, because of course the other is 5 loaves. And, you know, the first thing is to say, sure, you know, it's entirely possible that this kind of thing happened twice. I mean, the idea that Matthew would put it in his gospel when it, you know, is kind of not a historical event, I think that stretches the imagination more than the fact that this event happened twice and 2 different places. Perhaps I don't want to say something like two. I want to say different meanings or something, because I don't really want to impose a meaning on the event. You know, in the sense of like, well, that happened, and because we're reading it here together, that means that we have to have some kind of moral of the story. Well, it happened. That's enough reason to record it, I think. There's a light, but Matthew, I think, himself provides something of an interpretive lens for us. So I would prefer to go with his than my own. And he puts his right up front here, and we're blessed. We're blessed by not only God's providence, but by the providence of the church. The church is providing for us in our need, in our need to understand what's going on in the Gospels by the first reading that we heard today, right? This part of the book of the prophet Isaiah on this mountain, right? I mean, think of this, if we were more biblically literate, if we were to see that Gospel passage, just hear it, we would start to think of exactly this prophecy. Right? On this mountain, the Lord of hosts will provide for all peoples a feast of rich food. And they say, well, I don't like really bread and fish. So the rich food and choice wines, I'm not sure about. You know, on this mountain, he provide for all nations. Lord, wipe away the tears from our face. And so on, right. This is in part Matthew's lens is just a little different. It's a little different place in the prophecy, in Isaiah's prophecy, where we see that the lame will walk, the blind will see, and the rest. When God returns to bring his people back from exile, when God returns to be with his people. So this is, of course, then the Advent tie-in, right? I think I wrote in the bulletin this week, you know, we'll know when our Advent practices or disciplines are taking root or having the right effect, when one of the signposts was, we yearn for Jesus' coming. And when we encounter the gospel passage, the prophecy in Isaiah, our hearts ought to be stirred by what we hear, by what we see, to want to welcome Jesus. And of course, we, in the historical sequence of things, you know, we know that we're waiting for Jesus's return. And then I'd say the fulfillment of these particular prophecies, the Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. He will destroy death forever. Right? So we're still kind of battling in the midst of the rule or the corrupting force of death. But there he will destroy death forever. So we will kind of reach out to the future. We want that. We want the return of Jesus. We want the return of King Jesus. We want to live so totally under his rule all of this is fulfilled. It's the joy of our hearts. But we have even now, again, the anticipation of his coming and our participation in the life of his kingdom here and now. And our hearts ought to be stirred by what we see and hear, by, again, the practices that we're taking on to receive Jesus here and now. And I say this, like, when you look at the gospel passage as fulfillment of the Isaiah prophecy, you see this the plan of God unfold and really find its focal point in Jesus, and then those who are now streaming towards him, right? This is like we see the language of the mountain. Well, Jesus goes up the mountain, but it's not Zion now, right? It's not the holy city. It's not Jerusalem. It's Jesus to whom all nations are flocking. So Jesus is here, is the focal point of God's reign, of God's rule, and his advancing kingdom. Okay, so Jesus is the focal point. But when you see that this is the fulfillment of the prophecy, this is how God's kingdom is coming to life on earth as it is in heaven, then also we see like the personal and relational reality of how God's kingdom comes about. Because it's not, again, in our imaginations, can I say, I think because we have kind of like pagan imaginations, but I'll revisit that at some point. I'm just throwing it out there to upset you. Because we have pagan imagination, we have very worldly imaginations, okay, then we start to think of, okay, how the plan and purpose of God is going to be fulfilled, and it looks very different than what we encounter in the scriptures. Right, so for us, it's like, okay, well, everybody needs to believe the same thing. Everybody needs to do this. Everybody, and it's this all of a sudden kind of movement. Like, okay, then it's all going to happen like this. Everything's going to be set straight. And we, in our kind of pagan, contemporary American political and consumerist imagination, are like, it's got to happen now. It's got to happen this way. It's got to be right. Da, 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 da. Like, and all of that, of course, is very self-centered. We don't see it so much. We don't look that well into ourselves. Anyway, but this is how it's happening. Jesus being attentive to the needs of the people that are gathered around him, right? And his being moved, what do you say? My heart is moved with pity for the crowd. That's like, right there, you're tapping into the dynamic, like the power out of which the entire movement is built and grows. It's Jesus' heart of pity. It's his compassion that moves the chains, that advances God's plan. And if him, then also, right, those who he is gathering around him to have hearts like his, to share in the divine life, and the divine love, and to be moved by it in such manner that the world's needs, I mean, these are basic needs, like food. The world's needs are met as a result of the compassionate movement of the heart of Jesus, but his entire body, who animated by his heart. Right? That's us. So we want to prepare ourselves for the coming of King Jesus. We want to live under his rule now and advance his rule now. But remember, it's all about love. It's all about love. So let's not have a plan for the, for what ails the world. Like, let's not have, my own, like, this is how things are. If only we did this, things are going to get. Let's not have that. Except that that is driven by love. Except that that is driven by the heart of compassion that we see in Christ. If we have hearts of compassion, then we'll be more eager, not only for Jesus' return, but we're more eager for his rule here and now, and we will go however much further in advancing his reign, advancing his kingdom, restoring creation, if we allow him to inflame our hearts in the same way that his heart is inflamed for his wounded world.